Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Fourth quarter on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. at Chris Canty 99 and Gojo. In conference championship weekend, we had three of the four teams having the utmost confidence in their quarterback to be able to do high-level winning, get the job done, and get into the Super Bowl. Of course, we know the San Francisco 49ers situation at quarterback, but in looking at the other three, I think it's fair to say that all of those coaches, all of those teams view their quarterbacks as championship level, and now we have the matchup between Matt Stafford and Joe Burrow in the Super Bowl. So a natural question that's going to be asked over the next couple of weeks is, which quarterback do you have more confidence in this spot? And a lot of people are going to lean toward the veteran quarterback in Matt Stafford. He's 33 years old. He's had a great postseason run this year that has dispelled a lot of the questions that people had in his career about being able to win in the playoffs, including beating Tom Brady down in Tampa. But I think it's hard to ignore what Joe Burrow has done in just his second season.
It's been incredible, Chris, and this is the exact situation, almost to a T, we found ourselves in last year, right? Everything about the matchup is telling us, hey, football-wise, we should probably lean one way on this thing. But on the other side, there's this intoxicant. And last year, it was Patrick Mahomes. Last year, Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs narcotic that I've been hooked on for a long time had me go and say, all right, I'm just going to pick the spectacular quarterback. And Joe Burrow wants us so badly to do that this year because, Chris, he gets to swagger into all these situations. He is pregame and postgame fits. He is unbelievable quotes, and he is exactly what his team needs him to be at any given juncture. And I'm still going to probably pick Matthew Stafford and the Los Angeles Rams in this one just based off what we've seen, because the other part of all this, Chris, and the interesting part, they've scored three touchdowns on offense in their last nine quarters here. Part of this has been about Joe being able to invent in other ways that don't necessarily show up on the scoreboard. But if I'm going to bet on a quarterback based on what I've seen so far this postseason, I'm going to bet on Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, and I can understand why. When you have a mind like Sean McVay being able to orchestrate all the different pieces on that offense, you have arguably the best wide receiver in the game in Cooper Kupp. And then you have a damn good number two wide receiver in Odell Beckham Jr. to throw the football to. You have a really good offensive line when Andrew Whitworth is healthy. I think all of the pieces would be in place for you to have full confidence in the Rams. And then you look at the defensive side of the ball. They've got arguably two of the best players at their position in Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. So when it comes to top-tier talent on their squad, it'd be hard to pick against the LA Rams because we know in big games, that's when your big-time players are supposed to step up. That being said, Gojo, you can't ignore the fact that Joe Burrow is a force multiplier. This Bengals team isn't supposed to be here when you look at the talent on their roster top to bottom. Yet, they find themselves in the Super Bowl, and in order to get here, they beat the number one seed in the AFC and the Tennessee Titans on the road, and they went into Arrowhead and beat Patrick Mahomes. And the only other quarterback that had done that in the postseason was Tom Brady, the GOAT. And it took Tom Brady to do it in overtime. It's amazing that Joe Burrow was able to pull it off in overtime without getting the football first. But there's something to be said about the belief that this Bengals team has in Joe Burrow. This is a group that's an upstart bunch. They don't know what they don't know, Gojo. And it's clear that they don't recognize that they're not supposed to be here, that they are ahead of schedule. But this is a team that has said at every single turn that they've got more to do. And that more is trying to hold up the Lombardi Trophy. So while a lot of people are going to have more confidence in Matt Stafford to get the job done, when it comes to just the quarterbacks, I'm more confident in what Joe Burrow is going to be able to do, his performance, his production in the big game, as opposed to Stafford.
It has been overwhelming honesty, too, from Joe Burrow at every turn. This was the Bengals star quarterback when asked about what their season outlook looked like heading into 2021. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, because to your point about production, Chris, there are four quarterbacks in the last 30 seasons that have led the NFL in completion percentage and yards per attempt, including the regular season and playoffs, that have entered the Super Bowl. Steve Young in 1994, Kurt Warner in 99 and 2001, Tom Brady in 2007. Joe Burrow is now joining those ranks. That's the kind of production he had this season. But Chris, it just becomes the interesting question now, as the tide rises in all these other spots around it, because you know how this goes. In the postseason, now we're seeing the best of everybody going up against your worst attribute. and it's going to continue to be, can Joe Burrow make it happen behind this offensive line? Because in the Super Bowl, we have the Los Angeles Rams, number one in ESPN's pass rush win rate metric, going up against the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line, which is 30th in the pass block version of that. Like, you have best on absolute worst in this matchup, in this game. And for Joe Burrow, he has been able to overcome that time and time again. You just keep wondering if the water's ever going to get too high for him to breathe.
Well, can he be more under siege than what we saw in the divisional round against the Tennessee Titans when they hit him 13 times and sacked him 9? I don't know if that's even possible. I mean, it's going to have to be that kind of impact from Aaron Donald, Von Miller, and Leonard Floyd in terms of being able to affect Joe Burrow and make him uncomfortable. But we've seen at every single instance or turn where he's under siege, when he's pressured at that rate, Joe Burrow responds and is able to make the requisite plays to put his team in position to win. I don't think that the Super Bowl is going to be any different. The question is whether or not that pressure is going to be able to create turnovers and whether or not the Rams can steal extra possessions, create short fields. I think that possibility is out there. If you hit the quarterback enough, see if you can force a fumble. See if you can force them to throw an interception. That's what it's going to have to be in order to slow down this Bengals offense, because they got a ton of weapons, man. I mean, Joe Mixon as a runner and a receiver out of the backfield. T. Higgins, we saw the kind of game that he had. You saw the focus that the Chiefs defense had on Jamar Chase, even still being able to have 50 yards receiving and a touchdown. Like, they have a lot of weapons. Now, they're going to be down C.J. Uzomah, who had an injury. We're waiting to get more information on that, but he did not return, and that looked like an ugly, ugly scene yesterday. But there's something about what Joe Burrow does to this team, being able to galvanize this group, even when they're down 18 against the team that's the presumptive favorite, not only to win the AFC Championship, but to win the Super Bowl, to find a way to be able to come back in that game. I think that speaks volumes about it. There's a belief around this team that you can't quite quantify just based on the numbers. And I think that's what people have to understand in terms of trying to gauge Joe Burrow's impact on this Cincinnati Bengals squad and what that means for them over the course of the next couple of weeks, getting ready for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Will Brinson over at CBS, I think, put it best. We're going to spend the next 2 weeks saying the Rams have better matchups in the trenches and an advantage in superstars, coaching, scheme, experience in being in the Super Bowl stage. I mean, hell, I saw this tweet from Seth Wickersham earlier, Chris, and it blew my freaking mind as far as what Sean McVay has managed to accomplish so far in his career. Sean McVay is 36 years old, has had a winning season in every year he's been a head coach, has beaten Bruce Arians, Pete Carroll, Kyle Shanahan, and Sean Payton in the playoffs, and has reached the Super Bowl, as Dominique Foxworth pointed out, with two different quarterbacks now. And in all of that, Chris, the rebuttal is just going to be a swaggy picture of Joe Burrow in sunglasses. Like, it's going to be so hard to avoid all that. And so I'm sitting here now going, all right, in my brain, I'm picking the Rams to win the Super Bowl just off the rip right here. But that's what we've done in data with the Bengals at every stop along the way. And I keep wondering if at some point football is going to take hold and say, no, at some point you need to be able to block folks if you want to win this thing. Maybe Joe Burrow can continue to be the exception.
Yeah, and I think he has that potential. And Jordan Cornette talked about catching that lightning in a bottle. I was on a team that did that, Gojo. In 2011, that's exactly what happened. That New York Giants team is the only team that didn't have double-digit wins that ended up holding up the Lombardi at the end of it. And the reason why is because there was an overwhelming sense of belief and confidence in that locker room that if we committed ourselves, if we went all in, we had enough in order to win the Super Bowl. Now, a lot of that core from that team had been a part of the 2007 championship the Giants won over the undefeated Patriots. But I think the point remains the same. If you have that level of belief, It changes things, man. You're able to exceed what you should based on the talent level that you had. I go back to this, man. Like, the sum is greater than the individual parts when it comes to what the Bengals march out there on the field, especially from what we've seen in the postseason. So I don't think it just boils down to the simple matchups and the personnel. I think there's something bigger here with the belief of the Bengals and their confidence to execute in the critical situations of the game. And in that game against the Chiefs yesterday, they were 8 of 14 on third down, man. And Joe Burrow accounted for a couple of those plays with his legs. There's just that sense of, you know, that sense of playmaking, but that sense of confidence that they have in their quarterback, and that permeates throughout the entire locker room.
It's going to be exciting to continue to pour back over the next 2 weeks every element of this matchup to ultimately wind up back on just what Chris mentioned. There is something about Joe Burrow and this team that we just cannot place. Joe Burrow has jump-started this franchise. You can jumpstart the new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now, retailers nationwide. Coming up next, do we have to consider an unlikely candidate for executive of the year in the NFL after what we saw this conference championship weekend? That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And Gojo, one of the stars of the NFC Championship game is undoubtedly Odell Beckham Jr. And in a season where he had his quarterback on the team that he started with throw him under the bus and say that he was not necessarily a guy that he was going to be able to make work, it just felt like this is a little bit of poetic justice when it comes to being able to have high-level success. It's also ironic that it's a season that ended in the Giants firing Dave Gettleman, and that was the actor that was responsible for trading Odell Beckham to the Cleveland Browns, where OBJ said he sent him there for his career to die. So with this resurgence from Beckham, is this a little bit of a justification for the star wide receiver in terms of him being able to get some redemption after being labeled a bad guy at the last two stops in his NFL career?
Yeah, Chris, it's so interesting to me on this because, listen, there were certain parts of this that weren't great from Odell's camp. I mean, his dad putting out the long-form video here, throwing Baker Mayfield under the bus, kind of started a chain of events in Cleveland that wasn't great. But as we've seen since he left, everything is not sweet with Baker Mayfield out there in a Cleveland Browns uniform. Certainly, Kevin Stefanski is going to get a side eye for having a system that apparently couldn't make work. A guy who's gone out and proven a very capable number two in that Rams offense since Robert Woods went down. So, Chris, I think it's a reminder that especially for the positions that get the ball in this game, the ones that are dependent on what's going on around them, there's at times no substitute for a change of scenery and an understanding that a quarterback the caliber of Matthew Stafford is certainly always going to help because Lord knows he's better than anyone he's had at the last two spots that we just mentioned, and that your own happiness sometimes plays a role in all that because Odell Beckham Jr. seems to genuinely be enjoying everything about his experience in Los Angeles so far.
Yeah, to me, this is just an example of having the right culture in place for a guy that has a lot of talent and that can help your team do high-level winning. Like, that's the biggest difference. When Beckham was with the New York Giants, you didn't have a core of guys that had a strong, established culture. Sure, Tom Coughlin was the head coach, but at that point, knowing that Eli Manning's production started to tail off, there wasn't a strong enough force within the organization that could keep Beckham in line in terms of trying to fit into the overall agenda that the team had. And so you saw that Dave Gettleman was forced to make that decision after Beckham had that uncomfortable sit-down interview with Josina Anderson and Lil Wayne where he threw Eli Manning under the bus. We knew how that was going to end. The Giants decided they were going to side with Eli over Beckham. The same thing kind of played itself out in Cleveland after OBJ's dad took the shot at Baker Mayfield, and then Baker, you know, said there were some things internally that needed to get cleaned up. The organization sided with the quarterback over the receiver. Finally gets to Los Angeles, a place where he's been known to keep an offseason home. It seems like the right kind of culture because you have a lot of other stars within that locker room, guys that are considered the best at their position. And I felt like that confidence, that assurance that you have guys in that locker room that don't have ulterior motives, I think that is what allowed Beckham to feel comfortable in that setting. And he fit a need that the team actually had. And then we can't undersell the importance of the head coach communicating to Beckham the role and the importance of the role and how it's going to benefit all of them if he accepts that role. And I think that's what we saw in the NFC Championship game. That's what we've seen in the playoffs from Beckham. Mina Kimes put out the tweet. She said, Stafford has completed 83% of the passes targeting OBJ for 236 yards this postseason. It's clear that he fit a need for them. Cooper Kupp is their number one, but when Cooper Kupp is getting coverage rolled to him, Beckham has stepped up and produced, and I think it's changed the way that a lot of people in NFL circles are going to look at him moving forward.
Yeah, Chris, so many people are going to want to make this a referendum on a lot of things, right? Like, the one thing that we need to make clear in all of this is I've never really heard at any of the spots along the way that Odell Beckham Jr. was a bad teammate, that he was a guy other guys in the locker room didn't like. By all accounts, at every spot he's been, it's actually been the exact opposite. I've heard a fair amount of people say that he's pretty well-liked by most players in the locker room. And we know it's never going to be universal. They're big locker rooms with a lot of different personality types. That stuff's always going to be kind of water under the bridge for me. What's at the core of this is he's playing with a quarterback that's better than he's ever had, and he's playing with arguably the best coach that he's ever had here. Tom Coughlin certainly laden with accomplishments, but we know, like you said, the situation was different in all that spot. Sometimes it's allowed to be that simple, and it's gotten him to a moment now that Odell Beckham Jr. got to reflect on after the win this past weekend. Chris, you said something interesting in there, too, about him fitting into the Rams culture, understanding, hey, you were coming over here. Cooper Kupp is the best receiver and arguably the best receiver in the NFL on this team. Matthew Stafford was going to be one of your leaders at quarterback. You've got Jalen Ramsey on defense, Aaron Donald. You've got players that are better at what they do than Odell Beckham Jr., and that gave him a spot to come in where there wasn't going to be all this focus on why wasn't he getting the ball enough in Cleveland? Why wasn't he in New York living up to that standard that got set the minute he made a three-fingered catch near the sideline? It took a lot of that outside noise and pressure off him and just let him go out there and play football really well.
No doubt about it. I mean, when you have other guys that are the best at what they do in the National Football League falling in line with what Sean McVay is saying, it makes it a lot easier for you to assimilate to the culture that they have established. But beyond that, Gojo, the other guys in the locker room don't have any insecurities. Like, there's job security for a lot of those high-level players, and that's how Odell views himself. So I don't think it's a situation where anybody is trying to undermine him or there's somebody that doesn't want him to get his targets or somebody that doesn't want him to get his touches. It seems like everybody on that team is rooting for one another, and I can't say that that was necessarily the environment that Beckham was coming out of, whether we're talking about Cleveland or whether we're talking about New York. Now, there have been some signs of immaturity along the way for Beckham, but I think there's also a tremendous amount of evidence that we have that he's grown from some of the mistakes that he's made in the past. And as a result, he finds himself being a key part of a Super Bowl contending team and having a chance to do it and win one in their home stadium. So I'm happy for him. It feels like he's finally in the environment that he wants. He's in the city that he wants. And he's going to have a chance to do something that he's always wanted to do, which is to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think what you just said there is probably the perfect bow on this. A lot of things can be true at once. Every part of how he got here is not defensible or advisable. His role in all of this certainly has flaws, but the way that he has responded on the other side is now going to make him look like a clear winner in all this, because if you're willing to grow and you end up making the most of a great opportunity like this in the way Odell Beckham Jr. has, then you can walk out of this in a way that is going to make you look like someone who's done all of that and have us asking a lot of questions about the places that decided they were going to move on from you before this thing was all said and done.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Antonio Brown.
Yes.
If anybody was wondering.
The reverse Antonio Brown. What if I told you two star wide receivers took very different paths following their original teams? We'll get to that more as we go along with all this, because again, we're going to have 2 weeks to hammer every one of these storylines to death. So coming up next, let's start by looking how each of these teams put themselves together over the course of a long 2021 season. Next, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, coming out of conference championship weekend, we got the Bengals and the Rams on a collision course to Super Bowl 56. And a lot of questions about the two teams and how they got there, their different paths. But overall, just looking at how these two teams were built, it's clear that both front offices went different ways in terms of being able to put together a championship contender, with the Rams mortgaging the future for the here and now versus the upstart Bengals really building this thing organically through the draft the past several seasons.
Yeah, God, the thing that tends to happen at the end of every season, Chris, that's sort of unfortunate is we're going to try and diagnose what some of these teams did in a way that is wholly inappropriate. Like, I saw someone tweet about this. I think it was Kevin Clark over at The Ringer, that coming off what we saw from the 49ers season, there are going to be people for the next couple of draft cycles that say, we're going to go after a Deebo Samuel type. As if that's something that's at all attainable for the rest of mankind. This receiver that grew into a running back over time under one of the most innovative offensive coaches in the NFL. Like, we're just going to be able to find that anywhere. The same way, Chris, we have people, no doubt, I'm sure, going to be searching for the next Joe Burrow in the intangible section, the swaggering attitude, time poured over meetings at the combine, that people are going to be trying to psychoanalyze these dudes in a way that's just not going to pan out. So I think it is funny, though, Chris, that you talk about what the Cincinnati Bengals have built organically through the draft. They were at the head of that debate between, do you select a guy like Ja'Marr Chase at wide receiver, or do you protect your star quarterback with a guy like Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater? They made their choice, and it was able to work because you have a once-in-a-generation type talent at quarterback. It's funny because if you want to look at how to build up over time through all of this, that's what the Rams did around Jared Goff before it got to this point.
No doubt about it. I mean, with Todd Gurley, with that defense, they tried to put the pieces in place to develop a young franchise quarterback, which is have a really strong defense, have the balance of a running game, and then not asking that guy to do too much. But the problem with that is in 2018, where he had to be a difference maker going up against an all-time great defense and what the Patriots were throwing out there, Jared Goff wasn't capable of being able to deliver, and it was at that moment in my mind where Sean McVay started looking around to see if he could find a better option. He was willing to move on from his for show for some mo because he realized the guy that he had wasn't going to be good enough in order to get that team to where they wanted to be. Very similarly to what we saw from Kyle Shanahan in Super Bowl 54 against the Kansas City Chiefs, where the Niners blow a 10-point lead to Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. It's just one of those situations where you realize it's not enough at that quarterback spot. We need to have a guy that's a difference maker. But once you're able to get that guy, then the question becomes, how do you build the supporting cast around him? And it's clear that the Rams have made a lot of moves via trade versus what the Cincinnati Bengals have done, which is really adding guys through the draft. You look at T. Higgins, C.J. Uzomah, you look at Tyler Boyd, and then, of course, Ja'Marr Chase. Those are draft picks from the Cincinnati Bengals. That's the weapons that are around Joe Burrow in order for him to do what he does best. So I think this is an example of being able to find different ways to get to the same objective, which is your team playing in the last game of that football season.
Now, the difference here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, I think, Chris, is what we've seen. We saw and lauded before the resume of Sean McVay already at the age of 36. And I'd say the number of ways. I know the scheme hasn't changed a ton, and some of the names involved in it, you mentioned the Todd Gurley and some of the original core of that team. But, man, if you look at what he's done this year with Matthew Stafford, knowing they wanted to go more 4 and 5 wide, knowing they wanted to spread this out more because of the gifts of their quarterback, in addition to what they've normally done, we're going to have to wait and see for Zach Taylor in this offense because the goal is clear for them now. They got to go out and get Joe Burrow an offensive line that's going to make sure he's not sacked 62 times again next year because you cannot count on a quarterback finishing the season with that kind of contact on a regular basis. Are they going to be able to adjust then? Because right now this offense has gotten by because you have got spectacular skill players and a Joe Burrow that can rise to the occasion whenever you need. Are they going to be able to add other elements as their personnel improves and makes that a more full and complete team? That's going to be the part that we talked about. Zach Taylor's credentials falls on his shoulders in the next coming ensuing seasons once Joe Burrow's magic maybe doesn't wear off, but all of a sudden gets a little more rallying to help it.
Well, here's the other thing too, Gojo. As guys get a little more advanced in their careers, you're going to talk about having to pay guys in the way of contract extensions. You talk about all of those skill position players that they have. Those guys are going to have to get contracts at some point. They just paid Joe Mixon a whole bunch of money. They're going to have to make a decision on some other guys that they're going to have in that skill position core if they want them to stay around and grow with their young quarterback. That's going to happen in conjunction with being able to put an offensive line in place. So that's where the degree of difficulty kicks in for Zach Taylor based on how they've tried to build this team out is how do you develop pieces to replace the guys that you can't afford, the guys that are key contributors to your quarterback's success. I think that's the angle that you have to look at because it's clear that there's a longer-term play and they're trying to open up a much larger window when it comes to what the Bengals are doing versus what the Rams are doing. And, you know, L.A. has made no bones about it. Les Snead, their general manager, and Sean McVay, they're trying to go all in right now, and they don't really care about what happens 3 or 4 years from now when Matt Stafford's probably thinking about hanging them up. They're trying to win a championship over the course of the next 2 to 3 seasons. And if they don't get that done, then this has to be viewed as a massive failure because they're not going to have the resources to be able to rebuild this roster. So I think that's the interesting part about this. The timelines for both of these teams are a little bit different, even though they both find themselves in a big game.
Now, this will be interesting, too, what you just mentioned there. Matthew Stafford's going to be set to become an unrestricted free agent after next season. And, Chris, the one thing that I think we've got to start to recalibrate now as far as the long-term future for the Rams, yeah, they're going to have to make some concessions. But based on what we've seen, we talked about, Matthew Stafford checked every box you brought him over here to be a part of. He's your answer at this spot if you're Sean McVay. He's what you asked for. And so that's likely going to mean, hey, if this is a guy who, again, is not super old. Matthew Stafford's 33 years old. We know his body's taken a little more of a beating than that, Chris. But in a league that protects the quarterback as well as it does now, a lot different than the one Stafford came into, if you put him at the middle of it and you combine him with what we've seen from Sean McVay, does this all of a sudden start to become a destination that maybe could get to the point we've already kind of seen where, remember, the Patriots used to attract those veteran free agents that were trying to get a ring towards the end of their career and chase one, who'd be willing to come and take less to play for a team you know was going to be involved in the postseason dance. We already have seen shades of that with Von Miller and Odell Beckham Jr. this year. That could be something resembling the model for them going forward if Stafford and Sean McVay can make this work for a few years.
Yeah, that could be their model, and their hope is by the time that they've got to address some of those other contracts on that roster that the salary cap is at a point where they can afford to be able to add some other pieces, because we realize that's going to have to be their main pathway to infusing this roster with talent is via free agency, both resigning their own guys and going out and getting supplemental pieces, because they don't have a lot in the way of draft capital, at least not in the early rounds. You know, you're talking about them giving away first-round draft picks to get Matt Stafford, giving away a second-round draft pick to get Von Miller. Like, those are valuable pieces. Those players are supposed to develop into quality starters for your team. So moving away from those guys means that you don't have a lot of margin for error when it comes to using the draft picks that you do have, nor do you have a lot of margin for error when it comes to the free agents that you bring in, being very selective in that regard. So I'm with you. Maybe there is another contract extension for Matt Stafford on the back end of this thing, depending on how it ends up over the next couple of years. But they still have the same problem, which is a lot of talent on the top end of their team and not a whole lot of depth behind it. Keep it in mind, Gojo, when Taylor Rapp got injured, they had to sign a guy that was on his couch for the last 2 seasons in Eric Weddle to step in and play safety for him. This guy led them in tackles against the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. So I think that speaks to the razor-thin margin for error that they have based on their philosophy and roster construction.
Les Snead, apparently masterclass bargain bin shopper in all of this. Who knew? That's what the Los Angeles Rams have had to pull off here. We'll have plenty more time to look at that. But coming up next, as we get ready for the upcoming Super Bowl and all the things that go into the matchup, we have to take a brief detour to remind everyone that a man's got to have a code. And some things are going to be worth throwing hands over, always. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Shout out to all the guests that we had come through on the show today. Our very own Mina Kimes, co-host of NFL Live. We had Jordan Cornette, our resident Bengals fan and host of Game Day on ESPN Radio and Sports Nation on ESPN Plus, coming through and representing for the Who Dat Nation. Shout out to Jordan Cornette for being proud Bengals fan. We got to find a way to get him to the Super Bowl, Gojo.
Jimmy,
but I digress.
Pause.
Absolutely. Got to happen. And then also got to give a shout out to our main man, Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz, which follows us here on ESPN Radio. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. But Gojo, we have now reached a portion of our show where it's time for us to go three and out.
Three and out here on Canty and Golic Jr. starts off with a familiar refrain. You guys remember back in December when the Giants announced that Friday's Fan Appreciation Day, Week 15 in MetLife, would offer Giants season ticket holders a free medium soda. They were universally roasted for that event. It went about as well as expected. And so John Mara, the owner of the Giants, during the introductory press conference for their new head coach, Brian Daboll, decided to pay a little nod to that. Whoever shouted, "How about a medium beer at the end," is officially my new hero in the Giants beat.
No doubt about it. But Gojo, as you were reading that, you know the thing that makes me the most upset? I was actually at that game against the Dallas Cowboys doing several appearances around the stadium for the New York Giants. Didn't get a free damn Pepsi.
Wow.
I'm upset about that. I feel a way about that. Nobody offered it to me. I'm being shuttled around by Giant staffers, and nobody came through with the Pepsi for me, and they're going to give one to the media members after the introductory press conference. I feel a way about it. I feel slighted, given that I'm a part of a team that's responsible for putting one of the four trophies in the trophy case.
I'm just saying, somebody, the Giants organization, needs to get Chris Canty a damn Pepsi. That is our mission for the next season.
That's not asking for too much, is it? Free Pepsi?
Listen, and a large. We want a large. We will not accept anything below that. These are big boy sizes only around here at Canty and Gola Jr. Speaking of big boy sizes and big boy paydays, this confirmed now over the weekend, a sportsbook paid out 29,000-1 long shot odds on a correct score parlay that hit this weekend during the conference championship. A bettor had a two-leg parlay that correctly predicted the Bengals' 27-24 win over the Chiefs and the Rams' 20-17 win over the 49ers. The $20 wager, Chris, paid out $579,020. I've never been so happy or so nervous for someone that wasn't me, because this started to circulate, Chris, as the score was sitting at 27-17 and the 49ers got the ball back. And, man, that moment, you had to be thrilled if you were that better that Jimmy G was the one with the man rock in his hands.
Nah, Gojo, you got to treat that like draft day, man. You play that ticket, and there's no way that you're watching those games. You find something else interesting to do. If you got another hobby, you go fishing, you do whatever. Like, one of the most nerve-wracking things for me is the NFL draft and having to sit through all of that. And all of the guys that came before me were like, dude, don't watch the draft. You get the call, you get drafted, find something else to do. If you're that better, you had to find something else to do. That's nerve-wracking. But shout out to him for being able to get that win. And I think we got to do some reconnaissance on this one, Gojo, because a correct score parlay, I don't know, man. This person might or may not be related to one Aaron Dolan that comes on here and gives us gambling advice, our very own at ESPN. Like, she's so on point with it. I feel like this person has to be related to her some way, somehow.
Listen, I'm going to do a reconnaissance mission to make sure this person's not related to me. They might owe me some money all of a sudden. I might have a great business idea that I can put in front of this person. So listen, maybe this person can help us and the ESPN brass send Jordan Cornette to the Super Bowl in Los Angeles. We have come full circle on all this. We have got the idea in hand. Jimmy, this better, all of us, Jordan Cornette, the Bengals Super Bowl appearance in Los Angeles. We got 2 weeks to get it to all come together. Stick around here next on ESPN Radio. Spain and Fitz going to have you covered because Rihanna's having a baby!
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.